Hello.
Sorry, Barbara, we have a little slight problem with our
theme music.
Theme music. We'll work it out next week.
Okay. Oh, gosh. Well, you know, we don't need theme music here because what we're doing tonight is we're talking about the birds that are going to be singing and have been singing, actually, in Portland for a few weeks. I have to say, Scott, with me tonight is Scott Poole.
Nice to be here.
Yes, and Scott is a poet. With an MFA from poetry, and he has actually managed to do something besides teaching or bussing tables with his MFA in poetry. And what he's done is he's helped to create. I'm very excited about what's happening in Portland in general, Scott. The last couple years, and you've been a poetry director of Wordstock since last year?
Yeah, that's correct. It started about President's Day weekend 2 years ago. Larry Colton and I, with a box of files and an idea that Portland should have a world-class book festival, and so we set out to do that.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't like that word. World class. In fact, I'll read a poem. I'm reading it. Wordstock. I'm going to read an anti-world class poem. Anyway, go on.
Well, a lot of people think, like, where did this Wordstock thing come from? Are you some sort of traveling show? No, I'm from Portland. Larry's from Portland. This is a complete Portland production. So it's something to be really proud of, I think, that our book festival stacks up really well. And we have such great talent here in the Northwest, and it's a great chance to see them all at once.
And your idea was to actually bring out-of-towners and big-name writers to the city, and to not have it just be a reading for the big names, but to mix them. You want to talk a little bit about how you saw it?
Well,
sorry I jumped on you about world class. I've been working on a poem for 3 days about what that means when politicians say world class. So this is not politicians, and this is a national and, in fact, an international.
I got an email from a guy who's coming from England to see it. So
yeah.
Pretty excited about that. And we have authors coming from all over the country. And I've heard good things, from papers around the country that are reporting on it. And so we're really excited that, you know, it is starting to draw some national attention, put a spotlight on Portland's, you know, unique book culture and what's happening here under the clouds, you know, and
the radar.
Hopefully, the whole idea is that through these national names, that people might go in the door to see Gore Vidal, but they'll come out becoming a lover of Dorian Locke's poetry or Paul Ann Peterson's poetry. So that's the hope, and we saw some great things happened last year along those lines.
Well, the fact is that there are so many readers and writers in this city.
It's amazing.
And, yeah. And do you think it's that way? I mean, I think that I would think that we are very special in that way, but you managed to take a festival in Spokane, Washington, and that's why Larry asked you to help to organize this, to be the literary director. You were in Spokane going to school, and you, with a partner, started a festival there. You want to tell us about that experience?
Yeah, we decided that in a way to promote the university press I was working at, it would be a good idea to start a book festival. That way, when the university tried to shut us down, there would be an outcry from the public. So that was the whole big, you know, theory behind the thing. And it was also because, we put on an event for a writer, and, in this theater that sat about 500 people, we had four people and three were asleep, and one was an angry board member. And so that kind of gave us the impetus to try and do something for Spokane. And believe me, Spokane does not have the rich writing culture that Portland does. But we were hoping that we could maybe foster it through a good festival where you bring in great authors. And that started as a very small thing with 300 people. And by the last year, we had over 10,000 people going to events over 6 days.
That is so amazing.
Yeah, people come out of the woodwork when the festival's good. There really is a desire for people to hear really good speaking. Good, you know, they want to hear the human voice saying important things. And it's really neat to see people light up, and even young kids come out of a lecture and go, now that was cool, you know, despite all the input that they're getting all the time from the TV and the radio. So it's just nice to see the human voice still having that power.
And the amazing thing is that we don't think of Spokane as a literary powerhouse.
Not even remotely.
Not even remotely. So, well, it's also a tribute to your organization. And, you know, somehow you were able to tap into what you know and I know and the folks who are listening know, which is that that poetry is, or that literature is a sport, if you will, an activity that has many. It's not except at the very, very highest reaches, certainly in poetry, it's not an economic activity. Many very fine writers like live on ridiculous poverty wages, unless they're fortunate enough to teach, you know, or to have written a bestseller. Poets, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Just forget it. Yeah. And so it's easy to poo-poo it. And you and other people who have, you know, imagined this and worked hard to organize these things say, here it is. It's really happening. And you touch things in the people that say, yeah, you know, by God, I love to read, you know, and it really turned me on when I read this one. And I want to go here, and there's a lot of hubbub, you know. It helps the way bookstores, unlike many businesses, bookstores always say they do better when they're clustered together.
Yeah.
When there's like six bookstores on the block,
mm-hmm.
they do better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's like you got, you know, a lot of writers together, and that people that don't ordinarily go necessarily to literary events, you know.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we're trying to capture, is expose people to something they may not expect when they come out. You know, they're going to turn the corner and they're going to see a small press that they never heard about. Or hear about a writer's colony, or see a young writer coming along on their first book doing something, and then they can compare it to a writer who's maybe on their last book, you know, the next hour. And then they can take a workshop in the afternoon from yet another writer who probably flew across the country to be in Portland.
Right.
And it's an immersion like any other. You're not going to find an immersion like that in any town, unless you were just going bookstore, bookstore, bookstore.
Uh-huh.
That's what you did all day. This is like, but imagine going to all those bookstores, and then there's all the writers are, you know, your favorites, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that's what we try to create, is a really good atmosphere of words and language that you can kind of just bathe in for the day and just enjoy it, and come out with tons of ideas and be jazzed, you know, for a very, you know, economical investment of just $3 for the whole day. You know?
Yeah, do you want to tell us, run through the various activities and prices and...
Okay, well, basically the thing is a big book fair. That's
the
2 days at the convention center. And it starts at 9 a.m. and the readings start at 10 and it goes until 5. And $3, 12 and under free, gets you into that the whole day. There's over 150 readers per day. You can check out the schedule on wordstockfestival.com or this week's Willamette Week. And, you know, you have about 15 readers to pick from every hour. And in between, you have like 150 exhibitors to go look at, over 40 regional publishers. You know, there's agents there. There's a whole children's festival within the festival with, you know, characters, bookmaking, special performance by the Oregon Ballet Theater, puppet shows, great readers like R.L. Stine, who wrote the Goosebumps series. You know, so you've got the full range of activities for everyone, and I think there's even going to be some music there with, like, Dan Balmer and Pete Krebs, and so you're going to get to see songwriting, too. I think it's just going to be...
Food?
You know, well, food, there's, you know, the wonderful convention center food is there. And I wouldn't say that's a highlight, uh-huh. But if you're hungry, we'll have food for you. Yeah. So.
Uh-huh. And tell me, there's people reading also like Gore Vidal.
Wow, you know, what a career that guy's had.
Yeah.
He's on his, like, 22nd book.
And for the $3 admission, is that part of it or is that a separate event?
No, that's completely... part of it. And
that's
so
amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of reader that you'd probably expect to pay $30 mm-hmm. and see at a theater or somewhere, and I'm just so happy that we can bring that into the convention center.
I just might go and hang out all day. I just might live there for the weekend, actually, because I'm looking and there's people I really don't want to miss, and they're all over the schedule. Speaking of which, the opening readers on the poetry stage at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning. This is a plug.
We're trying to put some fire under you, Barbara.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm going to be reading with Jim Bertolino. And I want you to know that Jim Bertolino is just a really, really fun poet. I mean, he's a wonderful. I love his poetry. He's whimsical. He's
Northwest Old Guard.
Yeah.
He's definitely... all West Coast, so
yeah.
He's a great guy.
And he's fun to hear. And so Jim and I will be reading at 10 o'clock, and if anybody there is up to being there for the opening event, I would be happy to see, to read to someone else besides my husband.
I'll be there. I'll bring a date.
And Scott, thank you, Scott. You're wonderful. Yeah.
I'll bring my wife. Watch you.
Oh, good. I'm going to be there, like,
three.
I think, for 2 days. Anyway, you want to just tell us about some of the highlights. Honestly, this is just fabulous.
Well, you've got your big-name authors like Gore Vidal and Joyce Carol Oates and R.L. Stine and J. California Cooper and Dave Eggers. And, but we have such an amazing lineup of Northwest poets and writers that I'd like to mention, like Paul Ann Peterson and Clem Stark, Martha Solano. We also have Ed Hirsch, an amazing poet, coming to town. Dorian Locke, who's
she's
amazing. Hopefully she'll grace us with some poems later here. And Tom Crawford, great poet. And we also have Donald Hell, another amazing poet. We have David James Duncan is back.
Oh, I love his work.
Yeah,
he's reading twice, isn't he, Saturday?
He's such a great writer about
uh-huh.
our rivers and our Northwest culture, and I just think he's going to be amazing because he has a new book out, and he hasn't had a new book out in a while, so I think it's going to be a real treat mm-hmm. to see him. And I just think that the Mountain Writers stage and the Mountain Writers Poetry Stage, sponsored by that classic
Sandra Williams
program that's been around since 1971.
Mm-hmm.
I probably got that wrong, but she's bringing in over 52 writers for this. It's just going to be mm-hmm. amazing. It's kind of like the Portland Poetry Festival resurrected within Wordstock,
uh-huh.
you know. So
and also, you know, Bumbershoot with the book fair as
mm-hmm.
part of it, and we have had also Poetland, which
yes,
was
did.
Dan
Just
Raphael's organized that event.
Amazing job he did on that.
Yes, and it's a tribute to Dan. And tonight, as a matter of fact, we're going to have a few people calling in later and reading a poem who are involved or have been involved with Wordstock, but who also happen to be some of the sparks behind some of the events now and activities that are making poetry public and accessible and visible, and poetry and literature in Portland. Dan Raphael, amazing poet, and organized Poetalk, which from everything I heard, Poetland.
Portland was actually declared Poetland for one day.
Did Tom Potter actually do that?
He declared it. It wasn't very polite.
He declared it in his mustache.
There is some official piece of paper at City Hall that says it somewhere. Yeah.
Well, I think we need to have an annual Poetland now.
We
this is
do.
Great.
We're going to keep it going, hopefully.
Yes.
80 poets, 8 locations, 8 hours. And I understand that almost every reading was, you know, packed.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's just amazing that we even, you know, could get 80 poets at a moment's notice together, and that the quality of work was just still amazingly high. Yeah.
Well, it is amazing that one person could do it, but we know how many writers there are in this city, and it's just marvelous that, you know, there are folks that are able to provide a focus and.
Well, it speaks to the community that's just kept going for years around here that I've been really impressed with. It was funny because Douglas Spangl introduced me, and he was the first MC at the first reading I ever did in public at Cafe Lena maybe 15 years ago. So, and then he knew my uncle, who had read like 10 years before at Satyricon or whatever. You know, so it's amazing that he's probably been doing a poetry reading every week for the last 30 years, you know, so he's a cool guy.
And, well, you said that, I mean, there's a lot of people who've been around for a long time and doing it. Sandra Williams, we'll be talking to her a little later, organizer of the Mountain Writers series, and very successful in bringing people to Portland who folks might not have had a chance to hear in person otherwise, and the Mountain Writers series went on for a long time, and Paul Ann Peterson, of course, who is one of the main organizers of the William Stafford Festival. And it just feels
like... Which has become an amazing thing in its own right.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very big, you know, it's a very big and a very fine thing. And it just feels to me like there's a quickening. And I love it. And it's about time. And by God, you know, literature is so much more important, you know, than you would know from the amount of time in general that's given to it on the mainstream media.
Yeah, and I think people are starting to cry out for it.
They're hungry.
You know, they're really hungry for it.
Yeah, very hungry. And so thank you so much for cooking up this wonderful meal for 2 years in a row.
Oh, well, I hope that can go on for a lot longer.
And I think we'll start making some phone calls now to people who are going to weigh in on this, and we'll come back at the end, Scott, and we'll have to plan a program with I invited you to read some poems, but we decided that you wanted to promote and talk about Wordstock tonight and not mix that up, so we'll do the poetry.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. That would be great when I've gotten more than 2 hours of sleep. So.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I think I'd be kinder on our listeners.
Okay.
So.
Do we have Dan Raphael on the phone?
Hi.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, Barbara. Hey, Scott.
Congratulations on Poetland. That was a great...
We heard.
It was surprisingly wonderful, man. It was awesome.
Uh-huh. Well, it wasn't surprisingly wonderful, but it was. Was there a party afterwards, Dan?
Yes, there was. I wasn't there.
So you weren't.
I just went home and
You were tuckered out. You had to process, huh?
I had so much happiness in me that my face couldn't keep up with it. But fortunately, I wasn't driving, so it was okay. The tugboat was just packed at the end of the day. None of the readings had less than 30 people, and the Powell's reading had over 70. And this is just, on a Saturday, people are just showing up, and people are showing up at two or three readings, and it's just alive.
And Dan was able to get to a few readings because they were all over the city, even though his bus got hijacked.
Well, yeah, they stopped the bus to arrest this guy who had danced across the street and tried to steal some beer from the store downtown. These things just happen in Poetland, and they're accepted.
We still have justice in Poetland, I suppose.
Official or not, yes. Yeah. Or, Rule 37, don't try to make your getaway on a TriMet bus. It just doesn't work. All right.
Dan, are you going to share a piece of a poem or a poem with us?
Sure. And this is a poem that I read the other night at the tugboat for If You Weren't There. Must all things. When something that was isn't, been 2 weeks since I looked, months since anyone touched me on purpose, like a street with no houses, an oak tree marred in maple and pine, or is it my hands or eyes when the input gets mistranslated, when my brain thinks the outside world is memories to be reconstructed? She looks like college. This smells like Arizona. I only wear glasses when I sleep. I take anti-dream pills before bed and shower every morning, drying off with the news. Sometimes the mirror is a flat-screen TV. Sometimes the satellite dish is my hat, with only myself and cats to talk to, cats that leave after 3 days without food, carving graffiti on my metal door. I wake up hungry and silent, confused for lack of a bathroom. The waters run away. The sunlight is taxed by federal, state, and local clouds. The name of this country is lost in the history books. The name of this town is on the biggest headstones. If I could get out of the house, but by the time I'm reassembled, the phone and computer have messages for me. The clock is blinking as if to say, it's my turn to electrify the neighborhood. A bird with my face is about to explode.
Ah.
Hey, just in time.
Hello.
We're gone.
No, you're here.
Hello?
Hello, Dan?
Yeah, okay.
Dan, when are you reading at Wordstock?
3:00 on Sunday.
3:00 on Sunday.
Yeah, with Lois Rosen.
The 23rd.
That's great. On Sunday the 23rd at 3:00, Lois Rosen. And Dan, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, guys.
And we'll see you this weekend.
Yes,
okay,
many
dear.
Times.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks. Bye. Hello? Patrick? Do you have someone else on the line? No. Okay.
All right.
Scott. Oh, we're having a little trouble.
Technical difficulties.
Yes. Scott, who designed, I have to say, the brochure with those figures on it, and was that a group thing coming up with the slogans on the bodies, or who did that? It's fabulous. It is so clever.
We've got a lot of people are really digging on that, and it's very exciting to see, and that's Portland's own Wyden and Kennedy Advertising Agency, which has donated all their time to putting this on for us, and so it's just great that they're giving back by helping promote literature, and have really brought their amazing expertise to this program, and the group that does it is the in-house school within Wyden and Kennedy called 12, and they're very brilliant group of young designers and writers that put this together.
Are they like apprentices?
They're kind of like
school.
Yeah, they're kind of like an apprenticeship program, and they get to work on real projects, and they do other things like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and other great Oregon institutions. So We just feel really blessed and that they're helping us out and that they think that this is an important effort for Portland. And, boy, they really made us look good this year, so I can't thank them enough. It's just helps bring people out and make them think twice about, you know, coming to this book festival.
It's a brilliant brochure. If people haven't seen it, the poster and the web page has all over it these figures, they're silhouettes mm-hmm. of people who look very much like people. I mean, they're slumpy. Some of them are slumpy and some of them
they're
are athletic.
They're actual Portlanders photographed there.
I see. Yeah, well, that's why they're so distinctive, because very distinctive yes. figures.
Yeah, we didn't use any outside people for these. These are all Portlanders that were photographed and, you know, silhouetted. So there's some great sayings. It's the ideas that people get changed by books after they get out of the chair and they're done reading. You're never quite the same. And so I like the things to say, like, Tom Sawyer is my homeboy. And, you know, we have all kinds of little buttons and things on this. And, you know, it says Kurt Vonnegut cures my ADD and all little things like that. Or the only thing I have in common with my sister is Ira Glass, you know, things like that. So.
Yeah, each silhouette has a saying on it. And they're caught, you know, climbing out of an armchair or, you know, doing various activity. It's just clever, really marvelously witty. Hello, do we have someone on the line, Patrick?
Barbara, I should say that I did try calling Sandra Williams, but I couldn't get her. But Paula Ann Peterson just called, and I have her on the phone.
Oh, great. Okay.
Hi.
Hi, Paula Ann.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, Scott. Ooh. Have we got an echo?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, now that sounds much better.
Oh, is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. can you hear like a wind sound like the prairies?
No.
Are you calling from the Midwest prairies?
Oh, man. This is not going to be good because there's a tremendous echo, and I don't...
Well, now we don't hear the echo.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Paul Ann, do you have your... is your radio on right next to the phone?
No.
Okay.
No, I turned it way down, and I'm away from it. I don't know what's going on.
Oh.
No.
It's the sound of the muse just running.
It's the sound of the muse. It sounds like cooing doves a little bit, but very, very subtle. Just, you know, it just adds color to this.
That's right.
broadcast, Paul.
You're in a white flowing gown with
and
doves around you
Paul
right
Ann
now.
And Paul Ann is, as, you know, one of the people who has contributed to creating and making bringing the fact that we have an amazing literary culture into awareness by giving her time for a number of years now to organize the William Stafford events.
Yeah, the January birthday celebrations.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Stafford is, everybody who knows him knows why he has had this whole month of festivals and readings that he's inspired this, because he was a very, very generous man in his praise, in his words, in his assistance. Well, it wasn't much praise. He was not one... How would you put it?
Well, he used to say, no praise, no blame. And his idea was to simply encourage people to write
uh-huh.
and to not, you know, impose some kind of hierarchy on what they did and the result.
He was very modest, always, always, and, you know, always treated people with respect. It was never like he was the big important man. He was interested in what other people were doing. He was encouraging when he felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And his writings, his collected works are worth going back to again and again and again. That's the amazing thing to me, is that every year at these Stafford readings, people read one poem of his and one of their own. There's always new poems always to read.
Yeah.
So you can read poems that you love and never repeat, you know?
It's amazing how many different favorites there are. It's not like everybody has one or two favorites. That's I hope to achieve someday. It's like, you know, it's not like, oh, we all just like that one, read that one. You know, it would be nice to have hundreds like he has of people.
At the, Stafford event that Scott was part of this last January, he read a wonderful Bonneville Fish Ladder poem of his own, and then you read the one of Bill's, right?
The one about the fish counter.
Yeah, the fish counter.
And they just got rid of that, which is really was kind of shocking.
What, they're not counting them anymore?
No, it was like kind of one of those sly Republican moves where they get rid of the counter
them?
And then they don't know how many are there, you know. Kind of.
Oh,
thing.
My God.
They don't want to know, I bet.
Oh,
better it not. Costs too much, you know, to have somebody sit there for $6 an hour and count.
Well,
I guess.
And to report those meager numbers, they may not want to do that, period.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, anyway, that was a wonderful pairing, and that's the kind of thing that people do at these Stafford events is, you know, they find a Stafford
poem.
That's
the thing. You can
own.
Find something that resonates if it, you know, with something that you've been working on or something that you finished. It's, you know, don't you find that there's never been a time when I've looked in that book when I couldn't find poems that were resonant with something that I've been working on.
Yeah, and you know, I think at some of the events that you've been part of, Barbara, you've read political poems, and there's always been a wonderful match with a Stafford poem for what you were reading.
But not always only political poems, I have to say.
Yeah, no, because there's that wonderful poem that you have that's dedicated to Bill and is actually a kind of, I recall, a riff on something.
Okay, and there's three at 3 a.m., the poets at their windows at 3 a.m. Actually, I've read quite a lot that aren't political, but that's what seems to stick in your mind, Paul. And people associate me with that just because I stick up for it.
Well, we're glad you do.
I do stick up for it.
We're glad you do.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
Pauline, did you want to... but let me just sit for anyone who hasn't heard... I just want to give words of wisdom from Father Stafford, which is that someone asked him about writer's block. And he said that lower your standards.
Right.
So,
right.
Pauline, were you going to share a poem with us?
I would be glad to. This is a poem, actually, a friend who had a farmhouse for years in Oregon City and a turn-of-the-century farmhouse. And at one point, bees took up residence inside the walls of the farmhouse. And this poem is addressed to him. It's called Pragmatics. In your story of bees, they slowly fill an outside wall, three stud spaces wide, two stories high in the front bay of your old farmhouse. First, you try all the poisons, even your pickup set to run all day, its exhaust piped into a hole in the wall, while you go away hoping the fumes will kill them. But no. So on a winter's icy morning, you pull the siding off and scrape out story by tall story, thick clots of comb and honey, clumps of stiff, chilled bees. They had to go, no question. But tell me again, please, how you stood inside and breathed in summer's reckless heat, the fragrance of their work, wild perfume of wax and flower. Say again how you pressed your ear tight to the wall, heard the house humming, its blur of countless wings, a fine, even tremble. Thank you. And you know, I loved the word that Scott used earlier in the program, immersion. That whole idea of this long weekend here in, you know, this Woodstock. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, last year Ursula Le Guin called it Woodstruck. She said, oh, it's Woodstruck. Anyway, this idea of immersion in this wonderful world of books, of, you know, what is on the printed page, readers, writers, teachers, all the, that fabulous immersion in that world.
And Paul-Ann, would you tell us when you're reading?
Yeah, I am reading right after you, Saturday at 11.
So, on the Mountain Riders poetry.
Yeah, okay. On Mountain Riders stage.
So I'm a warm up act.
I don't
for Paul-Ann.
So
and she's a warm up act for someone else. So everyone's warming up for everyone else.
You and James Bertolino, right. Woo. That's wonderful. So anyway, it's a fabulous thing. I know I just sent an email to thank Laura Howe.
That's our amazing author coordinator, coordinates 250 authors.
And she had sent an email of the itinerary, and I wrote her back, and I said, just even beginning to think about the organization, the details required for something like this staggers my mind.
Really?
It just staggers me.
Yeah. It's an amazing job.
Scott, Larry, Laura, the whole crew. Kudos to you. It's really wonderful.
Okay, Paul.
And thanks for the program,
Barbara. And kudos to you. And thank you. Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Scott.
Paul-Ann had such a great story last year. She emailed me and thanked me for her reading last year. And she said that an elderly woman had, she had looked out on the audience and she didn't see the normal faces, and that a woman bought her first book, a free verse, in her whole life after hearing Paul-Ann read. And I just think that's such a great thing.
Really?
Yeah, that's kind of, that just made me cry, because I was just like, that's what we're all about. We're trying, you know, that people will see something and be shocked by something so much that they'll try something completely new and their mind will be opened by, you know, unexpectedly.
$3
at 10 a.m. in the morning for only
$3. $3 from 10 a.m. to 5. And what's the address of the convention center?
Your coffee will cost you more than the get-in.
Yeah. What's the end? Honestly, you can just graze. I mean, there's five things happening at once.
Yeah.
And workshops and...
get yourself a schedule and plan it out a little bit.
Right.
But you'll find yourself, it's hard to make choices.
Max stops at the convention center,
it
I expect.
It does. Take Max down and it's great. It'll probably be raining. It's the biggest amount of covered acreage in Portland, so you have lots of room to walk around and without getting wet.
Right. And I think we have somebody else on the phone.
I was going to say, when is Dorianne Locke's reading? Because she's on the phone right now.
Why not now?
I was going to ask when Dorianne Locke's reading.
At Woodstock. Well, we'll tell
when
you.
When is her when actual
Scott
reading?
When finds it, and we'll say hello to Dorianne. Hi, Dorianne. Hello. Okay, Scott, when is she reading?
She's reading 2 o'clock on Saturday on the Mountain Riders main stage in Exhibit Hall C with Deborah Magpie Erling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And the poetry stage is what? Where is that? What's the number of
that? The poetry stage is in one of the more smaller breakout rooms, and that's B-112.
B-112,
and
okay.
It's called B because it's right near Hall B where...
Okay.
The thing is, so everything's kind of right in the middle of the convention center under the two big spires.
And Patrick, when you get Dorianne on the phone,
she might be on, well, she is on the phone.
Okay.
I just don't know if she's on air. She might be on air now, though.
Hello, Dorianne.
Hello, Dorianne.
Hello.
Oops.
We may have lost her. And we also wanted to talk to, Sam at Clem Stark.
Yes.
Oh, man, that was a rude noise.
Wonder what happened. Hopefully she didn't just drive into a lake, because that's kind of what it sounded like.
Scott, your first book was called...
The Cheap Seats.
The Cheap Seats. And interestingly enough, you were looking ahead because you have actually been instrumental and in an event that happens at the Aladdin Theater, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of honored that I've become part of the Livewire family of the OPB show that goes out every month. I like to think of it as Prairie Home Companion for the Living. It's they have great, great bands uh-huh. and great sketch comedy, and they bring on local writers and people from the community, like the head of Metro and the mayor, and but they'll also have people.
And it's broadcast live.
And it's broadcast live, and then played later, but. It's great. There's people should come to the show.
And you couldn't be any cheaper than to sit at home next to your radio.
Exactly.
And listen to the fun and games. And I think, speaking of fun and games, we have Dorianne. Are you on the phone, Dorianne?
I am. Hello. How are you?
Hello, Dorianne. One of my favorite writers from downstate.
Thank you.
Dorianne teaches at U of O. With her partner, Joseph Millar, has been in Portland now for a few years, and boy, are we happy. Are we blessed?
Oh.
We're lucky to have you around.
Well, I was listening to you speak with Paul Ann Peterson. We're lucky to have her around.
Uh-huh. Dorianne,
mm-hmm.
Do you have some? Oh, Dorianne, you're going to be a guest on Talking Earth, I have to say, May 15th.
Yeah, that's right, with Maxine Skates.
Uh-huh. And so May 15th, that's, I think, the third Monday. Tune in and you'll hear Dorianne, a bigger selection of her poetry than we can possibly give you tonight. Dorianne is a poet of much heart and humanity and wit, and she has a new book out, which is what's the name of the book, Dorianne?
Facts About the Moon.
Good. I thought that was it. Some of the I cried several times. I mean, there were the poems in there that were so moving, and anyway.
Well, I'm glad if I made you cry. That's my job. I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't make you cry. Is there any special selection you'd like me to read?
No, but you know what? What a setup, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dorianne. Dorianne, you'll be...
make us cry right now.
Right, make us cry. Or laugh. Second. One or the other. We demand it. Anything but boredom. And Dorianne is never going to give you boredom. So... Let's hear. Honey, it's your choice.
Yeah?
It's your choice.
Okay, well, how much time do I have?
Well, let's say 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
Yes.
Well, then I have more than enough time.
Uh-huh.
Well, then I'll just read the title poem. How about that?
Okay.
Will that make you cry?
I'm already crying.
Oh, God. Well, the poem is called Facts About the Moon. The moon is backing away from us an inch and a half each year. That means if you're like me and were born around 50 years ago, the moon was a full 6 feet closer to the earth. What's a person supposed to do? I feel the gray cloud of consternation travel across my face. I begin thinking about the moonlit past, how if you go back far enough, you can imagine the breathtaking hugeness of the moon. Prehistoric solar eclipses, when the moon covered the sun so completely there was no corona, only a darkness we had no word for. And future eclipses will look like this. The moon, a small black pupil in the eye of the sun. But these are bald facts. What bothers me most is that someday the moon will spiral right out of orbit and all land-based life will die. The moon keeps the oceans from swallowing the shores, keeps the electromagnetic fields in check at the polar ends of the Earth. And please, don't tell me what I already know, that it won't happen for a long time. I don't care. I'm afraid of what will happen to the moon. Forget us. We don't deserve the moon. Maybe we once did, but not now, after all we've done. These nights, I harbor a secret pity for the moon. Rolling around alone in space without her milky planet, her only love, a mother who's lost a child, a bad child, a greedy child, or maybe a grown boy who's murdered and raped. A mother can't help it. She loves that boy anyway, and in spite of herself, she misses him. And if you sit beside her on the padded hospital bench outside the door to his room, you can't not take her hand. Listen to her while she weeps, telling you how sweet he was, how blue his eyes. And you know she's only romanticizing, that she's conveniently forgotten the bruises and booze, the stolen car, the day he ripped the phones from the walls. And you want to slap her back to sanity, remind her of the truth. He was a leech, a fuck-up, a little shit. And you almost do, until she lifts her pale, puffy face, her eyes to craters, and then you can't help it either. You know love when you see it. You can feel its lunar strength, its brutal pull.
Wow.
Well, I don't know. Okay. I think you brought tears to two sets of eyes here. Mm. You succeeded. Mm. You know, the kind of tears that make us feel connected. And thank you, Dorianne. That was just wonderful. And
well,
do you
thank
want
you
to
for having
Dorianne?
All of us before the wonderful Wordstock that's going to happen this week.
That's right.
That was worth about $8 just to hear that poem.
Yeah, you think so?
And you can hear Dorianne.
I'll pay you by the poem.
Right, that's right. And once again, what time is Dorianne's reading?
Dorianne is reading on the main Mountain Riders stage in Hall C at 2 p.m. on
yes,
Saturday.
Yes, and I'm reading with Deborah Magpie Erling, wonderful writer who wrote a gorgeous, gorgeous poetic book called Perma Red. It's fiction. But absolutely beautiful.
Well, we'll just have to be there hearing it.
Yes.
And thank you so much for calling in, Dorianne.
Yeah, well, thank you. Hi, Scott.
Hi.
We never really said hello.
Hello.
And I'll probably never see you at Wordstock because you'll be too busy behind the scenes taking care of everything.
That's right. Trying to keep
but
the
we appreciate you and we love you, so thank you.
All right.
And same for you, Barbara.
Thank you, Dorianne. And we'll see you May 15th. Tune in the third Monday night to hear Dorianne reading with Maxine Skates.
Great.
Two wonderful poets. So May 15th here on Talking Earth. Thanks, Dorianne.
Happy Wordstock.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I wonder if we have Clem Stark. Do we have Clem Stark?
I'm here, Barbara.
Oh, wow. Here's Clem.
That's like poetry dream come true night.
This is really fabulous. Great. This has really been great. Uh-huh. And Clem.
Yes.
What are you up to these days besides reading at Wordstock this weekend? And
well, actually, I'm reading Wednesday night in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And on the road a little bit.
Uh-huh. And when is Clem's reading, Scott? Do you know?
Clem's kind of being our finale act on a Saturday night at 4 p.m. On the Mountain Riders Poetry stage. So,
well, I guess we're all warm up then. We know. Now we know.
He's not warm up for anyone.
That's right. And things are going to be pretty hot by the time you get. We get down to that. Place. And Clem, are you working on a new book?
Oh, I'm always working on poems, Barbara.
Uh-huh.
I never think of working on a new book. I guess eventually I'll put them together into a new book, but I'm always working on poems.
And do you have a poem or two there?
Sure.
That you want to share with us?
Sure.
All right.
Sure, you want to hear a poem?
Sure.
Yeah, wonderful.
Okay, well, here's one called, this is from Traveling Incognito. It's called One of the Locals. Summer vacations, traveling with the family. What bothered me was being a tourist. I didn't like being conspicuous. I wanted to pass as one of the locals, to speak the local dialect with no trace of an accent. Invisibility was my ideal. My secret ambition, to be a spy. In fantasy, I would parachute behind enemy lines, and then, disguised, let's say, as the shy, unobtrusive village chimney sweep, engage in daring acts of sabotage. Later, while being awarded the Croix de Guerre, I would modestly downplay my exploits, crediting my fallen comrades. As a matter of fact, my career in espionage never really got off the ground, although in practicing for it, I learned to be circumspect and, of course, to be always careful in everything I say.
I'm just amazed at the amount of great writing we have in this, you know, in this area, and it's just so neat. We put this panel of readers together today, and it's just amazing to me that it's so accessible and it's out there. If you really, you know, it is it's vibrant, it's happening. And thank you, Clem. That was great.
Yeah.
And Clem has traveled in the Soviet Union and is a Russian speaker. And
well, call me a student of Russian rather than a Russian speaker. I'm an intermediate student.
And once again, you'll be reading on the main. Is it the main stage?
No, I'm reading on the poetry.
You're closing the poetry
stage.
Right. Is that Sunday night?
4 o'clock. No, 4 o'clock on Saturday.
Yep. Okay.
With Amy Uematsu.
Right.
So, well, I'm going to try to I don't know what I'm going to have to take out a hotel room or something. I'm going to try to just stay there. I just want to hear you. I want to hear so many people, and I'd love to be there.
I hope
to be there to hear you.
Well,
ma'am.
Good.
There's
a lot of simultaneous events going on. It's hard to choose.
What's really going to be great is afterwards on Saturday, directly after the book fair at 5:15, there's a chance to meet all the authors at kind of a informal cocktail reception. And we're just asking a suggested donation, but everybody's welcome to come on by and meet great poets like Clem and just kind of talk with them for a minute before. They're off into the night, you know, again. So I think it's going to be a really fun community thing for people.
It sounds like it's going to be fun, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I read somewhere that the biggest attended events in the United States are, do you want it, air shows. Would you believe that?
Air shows.
And you know something, all the time, the biggest attended activity, you know, secretly is reading and scribbling, you know, and it's time for us readers and scribblers to come out in the air, you know.
That's right. If only you could do a poetry reading from an airplane.
Well, thank you, Clem, and I hope to see you, and I hope a lot of folks will be catching you Saturday at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, see you then.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on the show,
Thanks
Barbara.
A lot.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, and thanks for coming to Wordstock. We'll see you there.
See you there.
Okay.
Bye.
And we had talked about Sandra Williams. We couldn't get her earlier in the show, and it's getting kind of late now. I have some announcements to make. So, and Patrick is...
Daniel Fless is called up, but I have not been able to get Sandra Williams. I asked, well, I left a message for her to call back.
Well,
but
that's okay, because we do have announcements to make. And Daniel, do you have a 10-second...
Yeah, you could say it's an announcement. You know, when you made the comment about the air show, I thought you were going to make a poetry joke. But anyway, speaking
joke.
Of simultaneously,
yes.
You know, it's the 100th birthday this month of Lord Buckley.
Uh-huh.
So all these writers coming to town ought to know about this. David Morrison of David Morrison Books owns a church now. So we've converted that church at Northeast 6th and Prescott to the Church of the Living Swing. The Church of the Living Swing is something Lord Buckley had towards the end of his life. This Thursday night at 6 p.m., flying in from New York is author Oliver Traeger, who wrote the biography of Lord Buckley over a period of about 10 years. Flying up from Los Angeles is an actor named Lord Jake Broder, who will come out and perform as Lord Buckley. And coming down from Seattle is a filmmaker, Michael Monteleone, will be bringing some of his documentary on Lord Buckley. We're going to have music from March 4th, people. There'll be food. There'll be Paris chili. There'll be
fabulous.
Stuff to drink.
Give us the address. Is there an admission? What's the admission?
Donation only.
A donation only.
Yeah, we
got
to make enough. We have to make enough to pay for Oliver's plane ticket.
Fantastic, Daniel. And what time and what's the address?
Thursdays. That's 4:20 this Thursday. It's at Northeast 6th and Prescott, the Church of the Living Swing. And it's going to start about 6 p.m., gather, eat, hang out, and then 7 p.m., showtime.
It sounds like a fabulous event. And thank you. This is our Daniel Flesses of KBOO.
Yeah, whatever. It's Lord Buckley's 100th birthday.
That's right.
Okay. Big infinity.
Okay, Daniel, we have some announcements to make, and
love
that
you,
sounds
Barbara.
Like a great event. Okay. And the announcements, very quickly, Looking Glass Books is having Judith Montgomery read Wednesday night at 7 p.m., fine poets. Thursday, April 20th at Looking Glass Books, Jan Curran, who used to live in Portland and is well known to many people here, has a new book of poems. Wednesday night, April 26th, for some time now, the group known as, I'm reading this, the Church of Poetry, has been hosting open mic readings at the Alberta Street Public House on Tuesday nights. They have a book out with the work from 28 poets in it, and they're reading at Broadway Books, April 26th at 7 p.m. And Patrick Bocard, I happened to notice somebody named Patrick Bocard is on that list, and I don't know, that name rings a bell. So that's Broadway Books on Wednesday, April 26th. And the Eugene Downtown Library on April 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. Has 20 Lane County poets whose work were suggested in were selected for a piece, a traveling exhibit of peace, a chapbook together with peace poems and art. And they'll be reading at the Eugene Downtown Library, April 18th, 7 to 9 p.m. And there'll be Michael Hanner, Charles Thielman, and many other poets, 20 people reading. And Talking Earth, next week is Walt's call-in show, and Roger Weaver, you called earlier, and I hope you will call in again when we have a proper call-in. Bill Siverly is going to be on next Monday, or the first Monday in May, the co-editor of Windfall, and he's going to be on with Tom Webb and Casey Bush, environmentalists. And thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Scott.
Thank you.